Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for September. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. Technology and reading are the topics of this month's show. We'll hear about Amazon Locker. Laura Gianarelli will stop by to entertain us with stories of her career as an NLS talking book narrator. And we'll start with Karen Kenninger as she talks about what's been happening at NLS.
I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've been accomplishing this past year since I spoke with you last. And then I'm going to talk to you about our future. So during this past year, we've been working very hard to look at the NLS service and to look at how we are going to be going forward. So we contracted with a consulting firm, which is a government thing, I understand. But anyway, to look at several things. We asked them to look at the concept of what does the next generation talking book machine look like? Should it be something that is a commercial off-the-shelf kind of product, or should it be something that we design as we always have done? The answer will come in a minute. We also worked on the Braille e-reader concept. Now, some of you may remember that from the time that I took this position, my goal has been to get Braille e-readers, refreshable Braille devices, into the NLS program for all Braille readers so that everybody will have the benefit. The benefit that I'm taking advantage of right now with a Braille e-reader that I'm reading my notes off of. We want to be able to do that, and that when I started the technology wasn't there to in an affordable way. And over the past 6 years, and it's been 6 years, I guess, there has been a lot of progress in that. So this last year, one of the things that we did was to partner with Perkins, thank you, Perkins, for a pilot project with Braille e-readers. Perkins purchased the Orbit readers and sent them out to several of their, well, many of their patrons, and we worked on that, and we learned several things. One of the things that we learned was, yes, we like Braille e-readers. And another thing that we learned was they're not 100% quick and easy to learn, so there's got to be a little bit of training. So those were a couple of, I think, important things. We will have a wrap-up report by the end of the year. So that was one of our projects. Another of our projects this year was something called Mocha. Now, Mocha was only, we only had about 150, I think, of those sent out to patrons around the country. But the purpose of Mocha, which we called the mobile, what did we call it? Cartridge, thank you. I was going to say mailman, but anyway, the mobile cartridge was to find out several things about digital delivery, because digital delivery is in our future. So these products, which we made pretty much in our laboratory, were sent out to people with the ability to have them automatically download things off of the wish list in BARD. The people that we sent them out to don't want to give them up. Because rather than getting their books through the mail, they now pop a cartridge into this device, pull it out, and it's got a new book on it. We won't be doing those in a big way, but we do know that we will need some kind of delivery system that is that quick, that simple, and that reliable. We also learned a lot about data delivery, like in some parts of your house you can't get it, in other parts you can, and some other things. More on that in a minute, too. So another thing that I have wanted to do since I've started, and I think we've wanted to do as a system forever, is to increase the number of people who actually use the program. We know that there have been a lot of people who could have used it a lot earlier if they'd only known about it. So we were fortunate enough to be able to launch an ad campaign this past February that runs on television, radio, and internet resources to promote the NLS program. Has anybody seen it? Yeah. Awesome. So anyway, we've got really good results in terms of callbacks from that ad campaign. We don't yet know what the conversion rate is, that is to say how many people actually signed up or will sign up for the service once they've called back and got more information. But it's been very positive, and I'm excited because I think that we will definitely make some inroads in terms of reaching those people who are out there who just did not know that NLS even existed. We've been, as you know, using more and more commercial books in our program in the last couple of years. And this past year, one of the benefits of being able to use commercial books is that when a book is really, really hot in the news and everybody is going to be reading it when it's released on a given day, we want to be there too. So, Fire and Fury, yes. And also the Comey book. We were able to get those out the very same day that the public, cited public, was able to get them. And I was really very pleased about that. We've also found a way to increase the number of titles that we have in order to fill in old series. I know some of you love to read your series, and you've been not real happy with the fact that we had great gaps in them. So we are filling some of those series out. Now, the problem with having so many books to do, and we've increased the number by 250% since I started, by the way. My pleasure. The one of the problems with that is that our system requires a certain level of money and a certain level of product. And in order to add a lot more books, we came to the point where we were not able to put them all on cartridges with specialized labels and send them out to the libraries to put on their cartridge on their shelves. Some of the books that we're adding, and they're all mostly the older books, are barred only. So they're not put on cartridges and they're not put in TBT. Now, some of you use barred, yes? Awesome. But some of you don't. Anybody admitting you don't? Okay. So those of you who don't will be able to get a hold of these books also because the network libraries can provide them to you. One of the things that the network libraries are beginning to do, and some of you who live in certain parts of the country, Iowa, Kentucky, some places have already experienced this, but the libraries are finding that it is more efficient to actually provide you with a cartridge with books on it that you want to read as a customized cartridge just for you than to be pulling books off the shelf one at a time, sending them out in the mail, getting them back the way we have always done. So over the next couple of years, I think what you will see is more libraries going to this new system where the books or the cartridges are actually developed specifically for each patron, so you will get the exact books that you want and you'll get them in the quantity that you want. Now this is going to require the use of the bookshelf on the talking book machine. For those of you who are still getting things in the mail. And some people have a little trouble with that. The people who are not comfortable using the bookshelf will be able to get cartridges or get books one at a time on their cartridges if they want. But the people who are comfortable with them are getting 10, sometimes 15 or 20 books on a cartridge and really enjoying the opportunity to do what those of us who download do now, which is to hoard a bunch of books and read the ones we feel like today. So that will be coming to your network libraries as well. As I said, we've been looking at the future of NLS as well. And I must tell you, I am very excited about our future. Because one of the things that I heard you cheer about this morning was BARD. Yes? And the other thing that got the biggest cheer, as I could read it, was the Amazon Echo. Well, what does that have to do with the NLS program? What it has to do with the NLS program is this. The talking book system that we have had for many years has always been based on a device that the NLS program has developed, and it is based on physical objects that have been sent through the mail. And that has worked very well. And we do love our talking book machines. They were very carefully designed, and they're a really fine piece of equipment. But we also have a lack of flexibility when it comes to taking advantage of new technologies. We're tied right now to the digital talking book machine. We've gone into Bard Mobile, so that has helped tremendously for the people who use Bard. But the problem is that although we have a lot of enthusiastic Bard users here in this room, the percentage of the NLS population who actually uses Bard is like 10 to 15%. Yeah, it's really low. And I think I know why. I think the reason that it is so low is that Bard requires some technology and some technology skills that just are not comfortable for some of our patrons, for a lot of our patrons. You either have to use a computer with a sophisticated system screen reader or screen enlargement or whatever, and then transfer it to the cartridge. Even with Bard Express, you still have to have all that infrastructure. Or you can use it on a mobile device, but the mobile devices, which are accessible, aren't all that easy to use and in a certain way. I use an iPhone, and this morning I downloaded the program because I needed to figure out when I was speaking. I thought that would be helpful. And what I got was a document that I had to swipe forever and ever and ever through, and I never did find what I was looking for. The mobile technology with the touchscreen technology for a lot of us is just not the panacea that we thought it might be. But guess what? I talk to my iPhone as much as possible. I love to dictate. That was the first thing I discovered, is because typing on that on-screen keyboard is kind of a pain, right? But I dictate to it. Now, there are some disadvantages to dictating. I will grant you that. When I sign my name, Karen Keninger, it says, Karen Can Injure. Whoa, yes. So then I thought, okay, I'll say Karen Keninger. And it said, Karen Can Anger. Whoa. Well, that could be, but it wasn't really what I wanted to say. So you do kind of have to be careful about that. But the point is that I also talk to my Alexa. And I say, Alexa, play some smooth jazz. And Alexa pops up with some smooth jazz. I say, Alexa, play Turn, Turn, Turn by the Birds. And it says, I will play, and I always forget the title because it's not Turn, Turn, Turn. It's something else. But Alexa knows what it is, so she plays it anyway. So my point here is we're getting in the habit of talking to our devices. And that's something that doesn't take any technical skill. It might take a little bit of memory, do I say play or start or read, but it doesn't take any technical skill. So my thinking is that the NLS program will jump over or abandon, well, not quite, but almost, keyboards and touch screens and go directly to voice interface. So what we'll be looking at for talking books is a device. I don't know what it'll look like exactly. It could look like my smartphone. It could look like, it doesn't matter what it looks like, because what I'll do, I'll talk to it and I'll tell it what I want, and it'll come back, and it'll walk me through the process, and I'll get the books that I want. Now, some people don't want to order their books directly, so this device will also be able to have this, what we are calling the MOCA mode, where it just pushes a couple of books to you. Each time you want a new book, you say, new book, and it sends you a new book based on your preferences. So we've got both options. We're going to be able to search and download anything we want, and we're going to be able to receive books that are sent by the library. I don't know what the device will look like per se. As I said, the form factor isn't terribly important as long as it's got a good talk button on it. We'll be using digital delivery. Now, this is a nut we have not cracked yet. Let me ask you this. How many of you have Wi-Fi in your homes? Awesome. How many of you have cell data plans? How many of you would be willing or are willing to use your cell data or your Wi-Fi systems to download talking books? How many of you don't have Wi-Fi at home? Okay. These are questions that we're going to have to refine, but this is very helpful because we're going to have to find out who has it, who we would need to supply, and how we're going to pay for it. All those things are yet to be determined, but they will be determined because I am confident that we will find our way through. We're going to be asking for funding in 2020 to do two things, one of which is to buy more Braille e-readers. We're buying Braille e-readers this fall, or hopefully. We put out a request for proposal, and we haven't put it out yet. It's going to go out in the next couple weeks, I hope. And we will look at the responses that we get on Braille e-readers. I know now there are 4 or 5 potential contenders for Braille e-readers. Some people think that I've been talking about the Orbit all along. I'm not discounting the Orbit, but I'm just saying there are other options. So we will be purchasing for piloting purposes Braille e-readers next spring. We'll be getting them out in the field. And we will eventually be going to a almost completely digital Braille program to match our digital talking book program. The only difference is that we will continue to provide Braille on demand for certain types of things when required. So there are a lot of changes that are coming. We have a lot of work to do to find out how to do exactly the things that we want to do, but with your support and your continued enthusiasm about the National Library Service program, I know that we are going to get to a vision of an even better, more flexible, and more wonderful program with more books, digital delivery, and be able to serve more people. Thank you all very much.
You're listening to Council Connection, Talking Information Center Network.
For most of us, Amazon means online shopping, package delivery, possibly by drones. But we very rarely think of Amazon as a place where technological innovations occur. Here's Peter Korn, Director of Accessibility for Amazon Labs, to tell us about an interesting innovation.
Not all customers are comfortable having packages left at their doorstep. Or maybe, you know, their employer gets a little tired of having packages delivered to them at their workplace. So we introduced in 2011 something called Amazon Locker. These lockers are physical banks of lockers about 6 feet high, 18 inches wide per column, multiple columns in a bank. And they are scattered across the country near grocery stores and pharmacies and other major areas, and you can have your Amazon package delivered to one of those lockers. We have a product manager. Her name is Shalane. She's been with the locker organization for a couple of years. And soon after she joined, she championed the locker accessibility effort. And I would like to give her a few moments to introduce Talking Lockers and what we have done to make them accessible.
Amazon Locker Accessibility.
Hi, I'm Shalane, a product manager on the Amazon Locker team. Today I'll be demonstrating our Talking Locker. This locker is located in the United States, but we have them worldwide and available in multiple languages. As a customer, when I approach the locker, I will read a Braille decal that says insert headphones to initiate speech mode in my local language. I'll then plug in my personal headphones to initiate speech mode. I'll hear locker prompts and instructions about how to pick up or return my package. I'll then use this tactile numeric keypad to interact with those prompts. Let's initiate speech mode.
Welcome to Jody Test _ Ada. Press any key to begin. There is a keypad with numbers 0 to 9, arranged like a telephone, located approximately 4 inches to the right of the audio port. The number 5 is marked with a raised dot. To repeat any prompt, press the star key to the left of the 0 on the lower left of the keypad. To pause and resume the voice instructions, press pound to the right of the 0 on the lower right of the keypad. Paused. Press pound to resume. If you wish to adjust the volume, press the volume button at the lower right corner of the keypad. To the right of the numbers, there are 3 special keys. We'll tell you the function of these if you need them later in the process.
If I don't understand the language, I'll just
wait. For English, press 1.
Para español, número 2.
Pour le français, appuyez sur 3.
For English UK, press 4.
Für Deutsch drücken Sie 5.
Per italiano premere 6.
Dla Polski pressi 7.
To repeat these instructions, press star.
I'll press 1 for
Welcome
English.
To Jody Test _ Ada. Press any key to begin. There is a keypad with numbers 0 to 9, arranged like a telephone, located approximately 4 inches to the right. For information on how to use Locker, please press 1. About Jody Test _ Ada, at any time, you may press the cancel key to the right of the 9 key on the keypad and marked with a raised X to return to using the locker. Press 1 for a description of this locker's physical layout. This locker consists of the kiosk where your headphone is plugged in, and several columns with locker doors of varying sizes. The locker is 6 feet tall, and each column is 18 inches wide. There are 0-1 column of locker doors to the right of the kiosk. There are also locker doors above and below the headphone jack. Locker doors will open automatically as needed, and must be closed manually when you are finished using them. To hear this information again, press star. To return to the previous options, press 0. To use the locker, press the cancel key to the right of the 9 key on the keypad and marked with a raised X. Welcome to Jody Test _ Ada. Press any key to begin. For information on how to use locker, please press 1. Otherwise, press the enter key located to the right of the number 3 on the keypad and marked with a raised circle to pick up or drop off a package. Enter the 6-digit code you received in email. If you 6-2-1-1-4-1. Code accepted. Thank you. You have 1 package to pick up today. Your package is in a locker to your right, approximately 53.9 inches above the ground. Lockers have doors 18.0 inches wide and are hinged on the right side. When the locker opens, please take your package and close the locker door. The locker door will open 5 seconds after you unplug your headphone. If you have any problems picking up your package, please plug your headphone back in. Thank you for using Amazon Locker. Please.
Interesting. Interesting. We've worked very hard to make sure that it's easy for somebody who is unfamiliar with Locker by providing all of the rich instructions that you've just heard. But at the same time, if you're more experienced, walk up, plug in your headphones, hit any key, hit enter, type your code, pull out your headphones, and out comes your package just that quickly.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please leave us a message in the new BSCB Fillmore box at 773-572-6312. With summer winding down, it won't be long before the nights start getting cooler, and many of us will be thinking about curling up on our couches or in our beds with a good book. And most likely, for many of us, that book will be a talking book, and maybe even one that's read by our next guest. Laura Gianarelli is a talking book reader for the NLS program, and she's joining us today to talk about her career as a talking book narrator. Laura?
Thank you. Thank you so much. You guys are going to make me cry. I spend my working life in a soundproof room, reading into a microphone through the glass to one person who has a set of headphones on and another copy of the book and keeps me honest. You said these instead of those, or are you sure you looked up that word and know how to pronounce it? Or you skipped a sentence and there's a noise I heard from the lamp and all that good stuff. So it's, in a sense, very solitary work. And it is my distinct honor today to be here with so many of you who are the patrons of the Talking Books program of the National Library Service for the Blind. I know that I speak for all of my fellow narrators when I say that we really love the work that we do and that we find it sort of amazing that we actually get paid to do work that we love so much and that we know is appreciated by the consumers out there who are you. I literally grew up as a narrator. I've been doing this work since 1979 when I was 22 years old. So you do the math. This morning I thought I would sort of personalize things a bit and tell you all a little bit about how I became a narrator. This is only my story, but I know that every one of my fellow narrators has their own journey that brought them to talking books, but this is mine. When I was in high school, my parents felt that it was my job to go to school and get good grades. So I did not have an after-school job like some of my friends. I just went to school, did my homework, went out to play, that sort of thing. After high school, I went to Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C., and got a double major in drama and French, neither of which is really going to lead to a very lucrative career. My first job out of college was at Olney Theater, which is now Maryland's summer theater, Maryland State Theater. Yes, yay, Maryland! But having graduated from Catholic U, I was, oddly enough, not asked to star in a play on Broadway immediately. And so I took the first job that was offered me, which was working in the box office at Olney. And I had the great good fortune there to encounter someone who had been a grad student when I was an undergrad at Catholic U, and he was starring in Joseph and His Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. He was Joseph. Yes. And very great show. And he came to the box office one day to arrange tickets for, I don't know, his mother, his grandmother, somebody. And he said, you know, Laura, you have a very nice voice. You should work where I worked while I was in grad school if you're going to stay in the area. I said, well, where's that? And he said, well, the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, it's in D.C. It's right near Catholic U. And he said, I would work there. He said, you know, I would work there a part-time schedule. It's very flexible. It's great for an actor. So long story short, I auditioned. And about a year later, the government moving at a somewhat glacial pace,
I was actually hired and began working at NLS. I would like to back up, however, and tell you a little bit about me and growing up and what gave me, without realizing it, I was assembling the tools that allowed me to become what I hope is a good narrator. I'm an Air Force brat. I was born, a proud Air Force brat, I was born at Bowling Air Force Base in October of 1956 in a Quonset hut, which was the maternity ward annex at the time. By heritage, I am Italian-American. Both sets of grandparents emigrated from Italy near the beginning of the 20th century. They went to Barre, Vermont, yay Vermont, because the Rock of Ages granite quarries were there. And, you know, it's a vein of granite that runs miles deep, and we will never finish quarrying that. My mother was born in November of 1919, and my dad in January of 1920, and I always thought when I was a kid it was so romantic. They were born across the street from one another, and they played together as children. But in 1927, Barre, Vermont had a big flood, the great flood of 1927, and the stone sheds where my grandfathers both working on the granite, were flooded and closed for an indefinite period of time. So needing to make a living, my mother's family moved to New York City, and my father's family moved to Connecticut. My paternal grandfather started a granite monument business, and my grandfather on my mother's side worked down on the docks cutting the big slabs of marble that would come over from Carrara, Italy. My parents got back together again years later when my father was already in the Air Force and my mom was working as a secretary in New York City. They married in 1955 on July 2nd, so yesterday was their 53rd anniversary. They've both passed on, but were they here, it would have been their 53rd wedding anniversary. Now, why do I tell you about my parents and my grandparents? Well, part of what makes me a storyteller and gives me good diction are my grandmothers. My father's mother actually taught herself to read and write English by reading the newspaper. She was pretty smart. She was pretty smart. And she did the books for my grandfather's business. But as she got older, so when I was a girl, she became increasingly hard of hearing. So if I wanted Nonna Mary to understand what the heck I was saying, I had to speak very clearly and distinctly, and I had to speak up. So in all my years, both behind the mic and as an actor on stage, no one has ever had to tell me to speak louder. Never. My other grandmother really never learned to speak English, even though she became an American citizen and lived here for, I don't know, 65 or 70 years. But she never really learned English. So when I was a child, she would live with us 3 or 4 months out of the year, and it was my job to translate what was on television. It was my job to explain that, you know, on what's happening on Bonanza or on Lawrence Welk.
Oh, Lawrence Welk.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, we always watched Lawrence Welk. Every week.
Every Saturday night.
But, you know, I would have to explain when we were watching Bonanza, allora, little Joe è innamorata di quella ragazza, ma a lei piace Hoss di più. Which is, little Joe is in love with that girl, but she likes Hoss better. So I had to learn how to distill the plot points and how to explain things clearly and cleanly so that she would understand what was going on and I would still be able to watch the show that I loved because I was in love with little Joe. The other thing that sort of fed into my becoming an actor was that when I was very, very small, My mother used to play Let's Pretend with us in the kitchen with the pots and pans. And, you know, I distinctly remember getting a group of my little friends together outside and, like, putting on our own production of Babes in Toyland, which I expect I had just seen at the movie theater on the base. But, you know, I sort of, without realizing it, my parents were preparing me to be a performing artist. I did my first play in the third grade. I was the third good fairy in Sleeping Beauty. It was also my introduction to the tragedy of being an actor, which is that I was certain when they had auditions that I was going to play Sleeping Beauty. But I wasn't. I wasn't even the first good fairy or the second good fairy. I was the third good fairy, and I had one line. And then I got the mumps and missed the performance altogether. Fast forwarding, I had a wonderful drama teacher in high school, Mrs. Sugarman, who instilled in me the radical concept that I could actually make a living performing. My mother, who was wonderful and delightful and unfortunately died when I was 19, but she had a massive stroke. But she was a little more on the conservative, you know, always have something to fall back on side. And she wanted me to be a secretary or a teacher so that I would always be able to make a living, and was a little scandalized when I wanted to go to Catholic U and be a drama major. But both she and my dad stood behind me, and I was able, with the support of that teacher, to sort of imagine a life for myself that was not behind a typewriter. I've always loved reading, always, always. So when that friend in the box office at Only Theater said you should audition to work narrating books, I was fascinated and intrigued. Nowadays, and for at least the last 15 years or so, I help train narrators at the National Library Service. So, you know, when we get some newbie in who's just been hired, I usually spend some time working with them. And I always say that rule one for doing the work that we do is that you have to love to read. The work we do is hard. There's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that go into making a talking book and making it sound relaxed and easy and clear and clean and all those other good things with correct pronunciations and so forth. And it's hard. You really have to love to read if you're going to stick with it. I've seen many people come and go in my 39 years at the National Library Service. And the ones who don't stay, 9 times out of 10, it's because they realize, wow, this is hard. And, you know, I'm not all that wild about books. So, yeah, I think I'll go, like, wait tables or something. It's easier money. We record at NLS as a team. There's a narrator behind the microphone, which is the, you know, the voice that you hear when you get a book from your library. But there's also the unsung heroes, the monitor, which is a job that I also do, which is the engineer, the person who nowadays sits at the computer. Used to be, when I started, it was a reel-to-reel telex tape recorder. But, yeah, we remember those, right? Yeah, there was no undo button on the telex tape recorder. If you made a mistake, you were sunk. But the monitor not only stops me from mispronunciations or suggests that, you know, the general in Chapter 3 had a German accent and now he doesn't, so maybe we should fix that. But they also make sure all the levels are correct and that there's no extraneous noises or the lamp isn't making a buzzing sound that will cause QA to lose their minds and reject the book and go, oh my God, there's a horrible noise. There's that person. And then there is the reviewer who, when the narrator monitor have finished with the recording session, the reviewer listens to the whole book and marks down all the mistakes that we made. And not just things like, you know, you said negligee instead of kangaroo. I owe that one to Ray Hagen, for those of you who have ever listened to a Ray Hagen book. That was his favorite phrase for a mistake, for what am I supposed to write down when I'm reviewing? Well, if I said negligee instead of kangaroo, write that down. But also stylistic things, like the he said angrily suggests that maybe the character is angry. Would you like to listen to this and perhaps make it a little more angry? And those are the kinds of things that when they come back to us in the booth to, you know, do the fixes, we don't necessarily do every correction. We might get that correction that says, you know, he said angrily, shouldn't that be more angry? And go, yeah, no, I think it's fine the way it is. Then in our studio, it gets yet another review, a 30% review, where another reviewer listens to parts of it and then listens to all the corrections to make sure the levels are right. And then we do more corrections. So only then does it go to QA. So our books are about as faithful to the print text as they can possibly be, so that the product that you get when you check out a Library of Congress recording are about as high as anywhere, and I would put them up against the commercial product any day. I was trained by the great Bill West and Ray Hagen, who taught me lots of stuff. Yeah, the great Ray is a wonderful, wonderful narrator, retired now. And Bill West was an amazing engineer at NLS, and he was also a patron of the program. He was blind, and he would come down to the studio and talk with us. And from the time I was only 22 when I started, so they were lessons instilled early. The work that we do really is translation. We are translating material from the printed page into an audio format to give you, the listener, an experience as close as possible to the print text. So when there is blank space on the page, that tells me I have to pause, because the sighted reader sees that blank space and knows that there's a change of time or place, or we're changing the subject. But, you know, after that blank space is a new part of the story, and it requires a pause. But the way Bill phrased it, that we were translating, has always stuck with me. People often ask me how the books get assigned. How do I get the books that I read? I think it's different in all of the different contract studios, but in my studio at NLS, our studio director, Celeste Lawson, usually offers a narrator two or three choices to pick from, maybe a novel or two or a nonfiction. And if you've spent like the last 2 months reading a very challenging nonfiction book where they go to five different countries and there's all kinds of technical language, she might offer you a thriller or a Harlequin romance, sort of as a change of pace, as a little reward for all the work that you did. Narrators are responsible for doing our own research. So I always say, in fact, we used to have a sign in the studio before our recent renovation that said, pronunciation is to us what spelling is to a print editor. So we really make a huge effort to pronounce things correctly. We have shelves and shelves of reference books that we take advantage of. And of course, also the internet has like changed everything. I just recently read a nonfiction book, and I sent the author a Facebook message asking her how she pronounces her name, and amazingly, she got back to me. So, you know, Facebook, YouTube is amazing, because you go on YouTube and, you know, you type in the author's name and say interview, and then you find them on Jay Leno or on some little radio station interview, and hopefully, the interviewer says, and welcome, Laura Gennarelli, so that then I know how they say their name. Sometimes you have to listen through a lot of interview in order to maybe hear the name. But all those tools online have helped us be able to find the correct pronunciations. You also have to be a little leery because there are websites like Forvo, which are places kind of like Wikipedia, where any old Joe can like get online and say, yes, it said Laura Gennarelli. And it's like, yeah, that's not right. But you sort of learn to know when it's either a robot voice or when it's clearly like someone with an egregious non-Spanish accent pronouncing a Spanish word. It's like, okay, I know, that's not right. But it's there online. You have to pick and choose. You have to be discerning. The technology, speaking of the robot voice, we are getting to a place where text-to-speech has become and is becoming increasingly sophisticated. And they're actually doing tests now at NLS about the possibility of having Siri, so to speak, narrate whole books.
No.
Well, thank you. The final little part of my talk here is I can't think of the right word, but is in favor of the live narrator.
Pro live narrator.
When I was hired to do this work, about 10 years in, I started going to different states to talk to volunteer narrators around the country and sort of give them tips on how to do this work, how to become better narrators. And I always say that a talking book is really just a fancy electronic way for me to read you a story. That human connection is very important.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that there is a place for text-to-speech. One of our wonderful narrators, who just actually, I helped work on this project, the library studio, the National Library Service studio, just did a huge project creating the talking book of John Lewis's graphic novel, March. I wrote the script, looking at the pictures and saying, okay, in the next frame, John is feeding the chickens in the yard of his parents' house. And he says, and it took me weeks and weeks to write the script because it's a 3-volume graphic novel. Chuck Young and Julian Thompson did the recording, Chuck narrating and Julian engineering the recording, and Michael Rosato, who is also a wonderful narrator, did the review and marked all the mistakes and also marked places where I had perhaps misinterpreted the picture, like that's really supposed to be Ralph Abernathy and not John Lewis that he's talking to, or that's Martin Luther King and not Malcolm X. And made those kind of very minute corrections. And that's a special project where the human factor is so important. But Chuck also, several years ago, narrated a really wonderful book about the Negro Leagues of Baseball. And it was a great book. If you're interested in baseball, and particularly in the Negro Leagues, it was a wonderful, exhaustive study of that. But at the back were about 50 pages of that which baseball fans love and I do not, all the statistics, everybody's batting average, all the RBIs, and Chuck had to read every statistic. We read every chart, and I would happily cede that to Siri. Because certainly the patrons of the Talking Books program want access to the same stats that their sighted baseball fan friends have, but it was a bear to read every word of it. It took us like 2 weeks of work, And that I would happily give to the robot voice. But the love scenes in Dr. Zhivago? Yeah, Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs? Yeah, not so much.
50 Shades of Grey?
Yes. I would like to share, because I don't want to take all of your morning, I would like to share one funny research story and then one story to complete my point about the human connection of the work that we do. The funny story is one of my husband's favorites, and he's here. Hi, sweetie. We actually met in the recording studio. So I was working in Bethesda at Potomac Talking Books, and my husband was too. Wasn't my husband at the time, and we met and had our first date while we were both working there. So the National Library Service brought me love too. His favorite funny story is one that I learned in Indiana, I think, when I was working with volunteer narrators, and we were talking about goofy mispronunciations, and they shared with me that, you know, as volunteers, they often work in the evening after work, and the narrator and the monitor are alone in the studio, and they were reading this novel, which was British, and, you know, a period piece, sort of Charles Dickens-ish. And they came across this phrase and had no idea what it was supposed to be. G-O-D-E-L-P-U-S.
Godelpus.
Yes, good old Godelpus. And that's what they guessed. They looked everywhere. They couldn't find it. And so in the recording, they said Godelpus. And the reviewer gently informed them that, well, it was supposed to be, you know, sort of in the British accent, and it was meant to be God help us.
God help us.
And the heartwarming close to my little talk is some years ago, probably about 15, 18 years ago, I went to speak to the Friends of the Alexandria Library. And the gentleman who ran that organization at the time was blind, and he and his wife picked me up at Metro, and as we drove to the venue, he was telling me how much Talking Books meant to him. And he said something I never forgot. He had been blind from birth, and he said, "When I was a kid, Alexander Scorby was my best friend." Because I spent, yes, he was an amazing narrator. Let's hear it for Alexander Scorby. He said, "I spent more time alone in my room with Alexander Scorby reading books to me than I did with my friends outside." And I think that's something that Siri will never be able to top.
Amen.
Do we have time for me to read something?
Yes, we have time for you to read a passage.
I have a very brief passage that I'd like to share with you. It's only about 3 minutes. It's an excerpt from a book called American Food Writing, edited by Molly O'Neill. So all you foodies out there, it's a fabulous book that I narrated some years ago. Has recipes, has stories from all the great writers. And this is from, to bring it back to my personal life, from one of my mother's very favorite books, My Antonia, by Willa Cather. Mrs. Shimerda grew more calm and reasonable before our visit was over, and while Antonia translated, put in a word now and then on her own account. The woman had a quick ear and caught up phrases whenever she heard English spoken. As we rose to go, she opened her wooden chest and brought out a bag made of bed ticking, about as long as a flour sack and half as wide, stuffed full of something. At the sight of it, the crazy boy began to smack his lips. Then Mrs. Shimerda opened the bag and stirred the contents with her hand. It gave out a salty, earthy smell, very pungent, even among the other odors of that cave they lived in. She measured a teacupful, tied it up in a bit of sacking, and presented it ceremoniously to my grandmother. "For cook," she announced. "Little now, be very much when cook," spreading out her hands to indicate that the pint would swell to a gallon. "Very good. You no have in this country. All things for eat better in my country." "Maybe so, Mrs. Shimerda," grandmother said dryly. "I can't say, but I prefer our bread to yours myself." Antonia undertook to explain. "This very good, Mrs. Burden." She clasped her hands as if she could not express how good. "It make very much when you cook, like what my mama say. Cook with rabbit, cook with chicken, in the gravy. Oh, so good." All the way home, Grandmother and Jake talked about how easily good Christian people could forget that they were their brother's keepers. "I will say, Jake, some of our brothers and sisters are hard to keep. Where's a body to begin with these people? They're wanting in everything, and most of all in horse sense. Nobody can give them that, I guess." That night, while Grandmother was getting supper, we opened the package Mrs. Shimerda had given her. It was full of little brown chips that looked like the shavings of some root. They were as light as feathers, and the most noticeable thing about them was their penetrating earthy odor. We could not determine whether they were animal or vegetable. "They might be dried meat from some queer beast, Jim. They ain't dried fish, and they never grew on stalk or vine. Oh, I'm afraid of them. Anyhow, I shouldn't want to eat anything that has been shut up for months with old clothes and goose pillows." She threw the package into the stove. But I bit off a corner of one of the chips I held in my hand and chewed it tentatively. I never forgot the strange taste, though it was many years before I knew that those little brown shavings, which the Shimerdas had brought so far and treasured so jealously, were dried mushrooms. They had been gathered, probably, in some deep Bohemian forest. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Laura. Thank you so much for the work you do.
That was great.
Yeah, that was great.
And on that rather happy note, we wrap up Council Connection for another month. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please feel free to leave us a message in the BSCB mailbox at 773-572-6312. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again next month when we return with another edition of Council Connection. Take care.